Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Condensed Histories, the podcast that takes pop culture and reveals the real history underneath. I'm your host, Jem Deduccio, and this time round, we're going to focus in on the 1992 movie Universal Soldier, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme.
It was a top-secret government project designed to create the perfect soldier.
Which means I get to talk about JCVD's career. It's a long name. No matter, even if you abbreviate it, it still takes a while to say. So I get to talk about a B-lister in the action stakes, and I'll be talking about the complexities of looking back at these various action heroes from the 80s and 90s. So that's relatively recent history and pop history as well. But we're going to finish on a bit of philosophy about what is the difference between a warrior and a soldier, and when did that period change? When was that period of adjustment between one and the other? And indeed, did one of those ever truly exist? Question mark. So lots to be getting on with here, but there's going to be some big, dumb action fun to be had with this as well.
You're dead, soldier.
No, I'm alive.
You're discharged, Sarge.
If you haven't seen Universal Soldier, the plot is bonkers, okay? So, we open in the Vietnam War. It is 1969, and we have two highly unlikely people to be in the American Army, although it is pointed out that Jean-Claude Van Damme is Belgian, but he's wearing American combat fatigues with a standard-issue GI helmet and an M16, etc. And we have Dolph Lundgren, Swedish, and Jean-Claude Van Damme, Belgian, standing there looking like American soldiers in Vietnam in 1969. Now, I am confident that Sweden was not involved in the Vietnam War, because Sweden, after the Napoleonic Wars, was completely neutral until joining NATO in 2023, 2024. It's still ongoing, etc., etc. But the point is, they've now picked a side just a few short centuries after being neutral. Not even the World Wars could rouse Sweden to pick a side. So, no, they weren't involved in Vietnam. However, what happens is these two men are in the same unit, and Lundgren goes crazy. He starts attacking civilians, which, to be honest, the opening, while I've been a bit silly about it, and it is a little overblown, it's relatively realistic. American atrocities happened regularly in Vietnam. The fact that a lot of the Viet Cong in particular, rather than the NVA, there's a sort of now a common mixing of those two. The NVA, North Vietnamese Army, was a regular army. They had regiments, they had detachments, platoons, etc. They fought in a jungle. They didn't line up on parade or anything like that. They may have fought in a jungle, but they wore uniforms, whereas the Viet Cong were a guerrilla movement, and therefore they could easily blend in with the local populations. They didn't necessarily wear uniforms, and therefore were much harder to spot. So because of that, there were many times, like My Lai, for example, where Americans just thought, let's kill them all, and and then we've solved the problem. Absolutely horrible. And this scene is well done. It's quite harrowing. It's directed by Roland Emmerich, who would go on to have just the best 1990s with, for example, Independence Day. And Roland Emmerich is German, so we've got a German, a Belgian, and a Swede. This sounds like the start of a joke. And the movie, after this rather serious opening, where Dolph Lundgren goes crazy, starts attacking the civilians, Jean-Claude Van Damme tries to stop him. The two of them end up attacking each other, and they seem to kill each other. And it does say clearly up on the screen, 1969. And then we're in present-day America, and remarkably, Jean-Claude Van Damme and Dolph Lundgren still look the same age, and they're now in modern, well, this is slightly made up for the movie, but clearly modern body armor, modern equipment, etc. And there is an attack on the Hoover Dam. And so this huge truck turns up, they come out, they never seem to miss a shot. They're able to do headshots from hundreds of feet away using silenced pistols. That's not how silenced pistols work. Also, they do the usual, incredibly. For the record, there is no such thing as a silencer. I've told you all this before, but they're actually called suppressors. They reduce the sound, but they're still quite loud. And that whole sort of like, I'm hoping that Greg could put in the classic sound of a silencer in a movie. That kind of almost hushed whisper isn't a thing. You cannot get a firearm to become that quiet. But also a pistol is not going to be effective at 200 feet, and particularly doing headshots like that, but they're able to do it. So it shows you that they're amazing soldiers, and they go round and wipe out all the bad guys in a very tightly directed action scene. And the thing about this movie is, I was a young man at that point, and I had seen a couple of Jean-Claude Van Damme movies, things like Double Impact and some other stuff as well, and it had all been relatively cheap and cheerful, low budget. But this film, clearly, money had been put into it. Indeed, Carolco, who was a company that would eventually go under, but this is the point where they were financially wobbling, they invested $23 million in 1992 money, and it grossed about $75 million. So it made plenty of money, so it sort of staved off the vultures for Carolco for a while. So it was a big hit, but the money was on screen, and I hadn't really seen that with Jean-Claude Van Damme before. And it marked his arrival from just straight-to-video junk like Bloodsport and Kickboxer to something more cinematic, for want of a better phrase. And he then went on a hot streak, because in 93, he did, in my opinion, his best ever film, John Woo, Hong Kong action master. If you aren't aware of John Woo, I thoroughly recommend you watch The Killer and Hard Boiled, both starring Chow Yun-fat, and you will see some of the craziest action films you've ever seen. Yes, they're very low budget by modern standards, but the choreography, the sheer insanity of these action scenes and set pieces, you could just tell that Hollywood was going to have to catch up, quite frankly, with John Woo, and at some point they were going to use him. And the first time, he was given a small budget, but Jean-Claude Van Damme, who is an athlete, he became a professional kickboxer. He can do his own stunts. There were criticisms from stuntmen about him not pulling his punches and kicks, and actually, I think the technical term is tagging, but I mean, that's being kicked in the face. Use whatever phrase you want. Of course, in a kickboxing championship, you are trying to hit people as hard and as fast as possible, but it's very different in stunt work. So, Hard Target is the best Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, with the best mullet in movie history. John Woo knows how to shoot action. He's got a genuine action star, somebody who knows how to do stunts. Again, it's ludicrous, but it's fun. John Woo knows how to do fun. And if you're going to kill somebody, don't kill them with one bullet. empty the entire clip of ammunition into them hilariously. It is a glorious bit of action entertainment. It's, if you want to know what 80s and 90s action was all about, Hard Target's a great place to start, and there's very little that doesn't top it in terms of just down and dirty stunt work, although there is bigger spectacle to be had. So Universal Soldier 92, Hard Target 93, and then Time Cop in 94, which is a sci-fi action adventure. Again, clearly money's been spent on it. It was another big hit.
Smart kid, you read my mind.
With your English, she doesn't have much choice.
Hey, I know all the good words.
And then in 95, you get Sudden Death, which is, in essence, Die Hard during an ice hockey match. And again, the budget was there, the promotion was there, but that was a flop. And that was kind of the beginning of the end. Jean-Claude Van Damme had a hot streak for like 3 years when he was a movie star, like his idols, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone. He was now up there with them. But it is worth pointing out that whereas Time Cop was expensive and did well, it wasn't the same as what Arnie was doing in 1994, which was True Lies. So he was always second fiddle to the real top dogs of the genre. Going back to Universal Soldier, it turns out that the government, US government, has been carrying out a series of tests of resurrecting Ultimate Warriors who are, and they're sort of computer programmed. And the critical thing is they have to be kept cold. The reason for the truck is they're in almost cryogenic suspended animation. And that means when, spoiler alert for the movie, that, of course, this is going to happen. Jean-Claude Van Damme is no longer a brainless assassin, a weapon for the government. He starts remembering his past. He breaks away. He meets up with this reporter lady. And the same thing with Dolph Lundgren. He shakes off his programming and goes on trying to hunt down Jean-Claude Van Damme. And because of the cryogenic angle to it, Jean-Claude Van Damme's forever trying to cool down his body. It's kind of an interesting idea. You know, he's standing in front of air conditioning. There are several scenes where you get to see him naked from behind. He was very proud of his buttocks. He showed them off a lot. Maybe that's your thing, in which case you go for it. I guess if I had a body like Jean-Claude Van Damme in the 90s, I would also show it off that way. And so, you know, there's another scene where he's literally in the trunk of a car, boot of a car, you know, whatever you want to call it, at the back of a car, just surrounded by packs of ice. It's quite an interesting idea. It's a sort of vulnerability issue for them, so it doesn't make them quite unstoppable. And in surprise, surprise, we get another showdown with another innocent woman, the reporter, between Dolph Lundgren and Jean-Claude Van Damme, with one of the best deaths. So if you don't want to know how Dolph Lundgren dies at the end of the movie, because of course he's the big bad, so you know he's going to be defeated. That isn't a spoiler. But fast forward 30 seconds to find out how he dies, or not to how he dies. So yeah, Jean-Claude Van Damme, of course, does a roundhouse kick. How else are you going to do it? Kicks him into a combine harvester, where he's then chewed up into chunks and spat out like mulch out of a chipper. There we go. Hello, welcome back if you skipped through that. It's uncomplicated 90s spectacle action movie stuff. It's interesting. And it led to, I believe, 5 direct-to-video sequels. 92 is when it came out. I believe that the Universal Soldier The Return was in 1999. So in other words, this is when Jean-Claude Van Damme knew that his career was on the decline and he started doing straight-to-video stuff, and Universal Soldier was available as an IP. And so it kept going on and on and on. I believe it, like, by number 6, Jean-Claude Van Damme's character himself is dead and somebody else has picked up the baton to continue to be the Universal Soldier. I don't know. I don't care. I only saw the first one. Some of them are so awful, the sequels pretend it didn't happen, and some of the sequels are actually pretty solid direct-to-video action fare, if that's your thing. Now, I do have to say that this was kind of inspired by a YouTube channel, which I'm just going to do a quick... I don't know why I bother shouting out things that are much bigger than me, but I'll do it anyway. If you like action films, then I do recommend a YouTube channel called Space Ice. And what they do is they do a comedy overlap. They show you a 15-minute cut of the movie as they talk it through in a ridiculous way. Clearly, what they're saying isn't quite what's happening on screen. And I'm always going to say that it's better when he picks on a bad movie. And he has a particular grudge against Steven Seagal, which I'll come back to in a moment because I want to talk about A-lister and B-listers. But Steven Seagal's made loads of terrible, terrible movies, and therefore it's kind of fun to pick those to pieces. It's always less fun when he does a good Arnie film because you know it already so well, and what's there to pick at? It's a pretty good film of that genre. But anyway, Space Ice, if you fancy some testosterone-filled silly humour, I thoroughly recommend that as a good distraction. Going back, I like picking up on this stuff. So, the actual real name, the thing about Arnold Schwarzenegger is that's a ridiculous name, but that's his real name. But with the wonderful world of Jean-Claude Van Damme, his real name is indeed Jean-Claude, but then it's Camille François Van Varenberg. That is his actual name. He decided to abbreviate all that later stuff into just Van Damme. Why not? That was his background. He was, as I said, yeah, genuinely, he was in competition in kickboxing. He did his very first movie. He played a gay kickboxer. It's in French. It's from Belgium. I think it's in black and white from memory. And I guess ever since then, he's been overcompensating because he's a ridiculous ladies' man in virtually every other film in the 80s and 90s. He comes to prominence in a movie where he actually plays the bad guy. He's not very much in it, but his athleticism is clearly there. And so once we get into the likes of Bloodsport and Kickboxer, he's able to show his style. And he's a relatively good-looking guy. I'm going to say that Jean-Claude Van Damme looks more handsome than the likes of Arnold Schwarzenegger or Sylvester Stallone. So it didn't surprise me that he didn't try some more romantic movies later on, which completely flopped because the women weren't really interested in seeing the sweaty action man be romantic. By then, he was already going down a path. And this is where, like I say, there's going to be a conversation about the different levels of action star. And in the 21st century, now that everything's streamable, etc., and you get things like, as I said, Space Ice, throwing in Arnold Schwarzenegger with the likes of Steven Seagal, it's kind of forgotten how important the two big boys of the genre, Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger, truly were when you compare them to everybody else. Now, I've done a whole episode on Arnie. He is an outlier because he was an athlete. Bodybuilding is athletic. If you don't believe me, try building a body like Arnie's. So you've got an athlete who then became an actor, which is the same as Jean-Claude Van Damme or Steven Seagal or whatever. But he's just so smart and so driven that we can call him the outlier. But the thing about Stallone that people forget is he's an actor first. He was always trying to be an actor. He had bit parts as heavies in certain movies. But it was the fact that he wrote Rocky and starred in Rocky tells you that he's not just a one-trick pony. He may have played a lug, but he was acting like a lug. Now, this obviously caused problems with his career when he tried to do more sophisticated stuff. Immediately after Rocky, he tried to do Fist, which is one of those 70s historical dramas which is trying to say something. And it was about unions in the 1930s. Try to find a copy of it. It's really hard, but I've seen scenes.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
They're not going to beat us down no more. They're not going to burn us down no more. They're not going to shoot us down no more. Because if they do, we're going to do what Mike did. We're coming at them with everything we got.
It's eminently watchable from what I've seen. Maybe it's too long or whatever. It was a flop, though, because people wanted to see more Rocky. Paradise Alley. But the thing is that he starts to direct as well. People forget he directed most of the Rocky movies, and he's directed other things too. The guy is multi-talented. He's not just muscles. Whereas, to be fair to Jean-Claude Van Damme and Schwarzenegger, they're having to act not in their mother tongue for starters, but there was no sign from Jean-Claude Van Damme in his early movies that he was a great actor. He was a great athlete. He could do the splits, and my goodness, he still does the splits. For the records, his best splits is in Time Cop, where to get out of the way of the water, he has to do the splits over the kitchen cabinets and stuff. And he's doing it in his boxer shorts, so there's something for some kind of community or whatever, whoever likes that. So Stallone comes from, shall we say, a legitimate background. Acting, screenwriting. Like I say, Schwarzenegger's an outlier, but Schwarzenegger, it took him 10 years to properly break into the marketplace. And he, because he's a really intelligent guy, he picked the right movies and so rapidly started moving things around so that he could evolve his character. Whereas, if I showed you clips between Bloodsport and Kickboxer, you would find it hard to work out which one was which, to be honest. And same thing with Double Impact and some of the other movies, Lionheart, or some places called AWOL. These movies just blur into each other. Jean-Claude Van Damme was making the same movie over and over again. And it meant that, while yes, he did eventually become a theatrically released star, he only had one trick, which was kicking things. Nobody ever said that he was a great actor. He wasn't really wooden, but he did his talking with his feet. So then we come to Steven Seagal, who I have no problem with people making fun of. He's a completely odious individual. But when you look at his very early works, they're good, action-y, straight-to-video type movies. I won't bother telling you any of the Steven Seagal movies, but a bit like Van Damme, he does eventually get a big theatrical release that does do well with Under Siege, But as a number of people have said, the trick about that movie is he's not in it as much as you think he is. Seeing it's his movie, it's actually more about the other people. And Tommy Lee Jones is doing all the heavy lifting, doing the acting. He is an absolute charisma vacuum. He has no riz, as I believe the kids say today. And on top of that, all the allegations about sexual misconduct and bullying and things like that, he's just a terrible human being. He still thinks he's got it. The later films, they're perfect for something like Space Ice to spoof because he's clearly out of shape. He's incredibly lazy with his work. He's dubbed in some areas because he's so incoherent. He seems to think he's black. He's sort of got this sort of black drawl to his voice, which is weird. Also, there are times when he thinks he's Native American or he's an expert on Asian culture. It's just all the cultural appropriation and misogyny is present with Steven Seagal. He now lives in Russia. He backs Putin. There is just nothing there to think there's anything good about. He's a sexual predator who's way past his prime, who was genuinely good at Aikido 40 years ago, but he's made up stuff about training the CIA, and so it's just a horrible, odious person. So again, a bit like Van Damme, is he did have his moment in the sun, but he didn't have the brains or the connections or the people around him to say no, to captivate and keep going and evolving like the Schwarzeneggers. See, the thing is, with Van Damme and with Steven Seagal, they got lucky. Whereas Stallone and Schwarzenegger, yeah, they've had their downtimes as well, but they had a plan, and they've had resurgences. And when, at their peak, a Stallone or Schwarzenegger movie came out, it was an event. The whole world was excited about it. Whereas with something like Universal Soldier, it was a case of, huh, wasn't expecting that to be that good. Whereas you're expecting Terminator 2 to be a big thing. Rambo First Blood Part 2, it was a monster hit around the world. These movies were some of the biggest grossing movies of the year. That was not the same thing. And Universal Soldier did well. It wasn't in the top 10 grossers in the North American market of that year. So this is the thing that the modern day kids think, that, you know, a Schwarzenegger movie was the same thing as a Seagal movie. It really wasn't. There was a different budget, different expectations, different buzz around them. Then I'm also going to throw in there Chuck Norris. Yes, he was able to spar in a movie against Bruce Lee, but he's clearly then 10 years older than these other guys. And just like the Seagals and Van Dams, he just didn't have the vision, if you like, of where he could go. He did Delta Force, then Delta Force 2, and then Delta Force 3. I mean, really, Delta Force wasn't a great film in the first place. He did Walker, Texas Ranger, which was a big hit on TV in the 90s. It's the sort of thing that, again, gets mentioned in other bits of pop culture like Friends. And everybody knew what they meant, but TV is a long way away from big blockbuster hits, top 10 of the year, global box office, etc. So, yes, Chuck Norris kept making movies, but again, these were all straight-to-video, low-budget affairs where they kind of knew how many people were going to rent them out, they could set the budget accordingly, and therefore there wasn't any great spectacle to these movies. Now, I'm going to go into something that may surprise you. If you've seen Universal Soldier, if you're a fan of these action-type movies, you may not be aware that Universal Soldier is based on a comic. In fact, it's based on a British comic from 2000 AD. You know, the people who brought you Judge Dredd? Well, they had lots of different stories in it, and there was, in the 1980s, starting in 1987, written by Alan McKenzie, we get Universal Soldier. And that was the time when I was reading 2000 AD. And I loved it. And Universal Soldier, no matter how much money they put on the screen, it's nowhere near as good as the comic book. And I really do think they need to do a reboot of this because it's a brilliant idea. Basically, a man has to go in unarmed and he has to fight his way to the goal. Okay, it doesn't really matter what the setting is. But the point is, he's had a special implant, so that every time he's faced with combat, he flashes back to a period of history where somebody did the fighting that's going to help him win. So somebody's attacking him. It's really close. It's in a small room. So suddenly he flashes to the best prison brawler from history, and he fights them that way, using prison brawling skills. And so suddenly the artwork changes to fighting in a prison, and then it goes back to the guy walking towards his goal. Somebody attacks him with a sword, and he manages to grab a blade himself. So then we cut to a samurai scene. You get the idea. So he's the universal soldier. Anytime he's being fought, he reverts to the type of combat that would win and would be appropriate for the era that when you would win. So you've got gladiators and so on and so forth. It's a brilliant idea. And hopefully, as I'm describing this to you, you realize that would be a great movie. That if you had almost like a John Wick, where every time he's in a fight, the entire scenery and style changes. So it is ancient samurai, or it's medieval combat, or whatever. It could be World War II. It would be an amazingly artistic action film. Please, if anybody's hearing this, I'm sure the original rights to Universal Soldier wouldn't cost a fortune. It wouldn't be that expensive to have 4 or 5 set pieces in period, and you just have to tie it together with this basic idea. But Alan McKenzie needs more love, because that's a brilliant idea that needs to be realized properly, because Universal Soldier, yes, you've got 2 eras. You've got Vietnam and you've got today, but there are none of these kind of flashback type scenarios. And what you have is a perfectly serviceable action movie, but it ain't actually Universal Soldier. Hopefully, as I've gone through all of that, you can see that I have love for Jean-Claude Van Damme, and I do like a good action movie. And it is a shame. Like I said, apart from John Wick, there just aren't really action films anymore. Action evolved into the superhero movies, which made it kid-friendly. And this is why people do like going back to your Lethal Weapons, Die Hards, etc. Because we like things that are a bit sweary, that are a bit violent, that are a bit shooty. You could argue that they might have been misogynistic, and I hear you on that, and there are some bits that we could perhaps take out, but Predator's just a great film. It's a great sci-fi actioner. And it hasn't really aged that badly. The starters, they made the smart decision of filming it in a jungle, so there aren't sort of horrible green screen behind them or anything like that. It's the same thing with Universal Soldier. And this is the thing, they don't make them like they used to, is true. John Wick absolutely beats all of these movies in terms of action, but that's the only one holding up the banner. There are action elements to Fast and Furious movies, but there's so much CGI in that, it certainly doesn't feel that way. Now, Jem, don't be retrograde. You can't just make them like the past. Well, John Wick proves that you can. Atomic Blonde proves that you can. What people want is unsophisticated action excitement and entertainment. And it used to be most of the box office. Now it's a very rare bird indeed. I would argue that in 2023, there probably were 2 good action films. That was Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1, and John Wick 4. But it's been a while since you've had 2 good action films coming out in the same year that are a big deal financially as well. So that's the world of action. I'm sure we'll revisit it at some point. But the Universal Soldier, you could argue, is probably the wrong name for it. Going back to Alan McKenzie's idea, there is this concept of warrior and soldier. And this is the bit, as I said, I wanted to deconstruct, have almost a philosophical conversation about it. Because we talk about the brave soldiers, and sometimes we do use like the unknown soldier, the burial sites and places like that. So, yes, soldier is used today, but warrior is quite often used going back in time. And I've been thinking about this quite a lot. What is the difference between a warrior and a soldier? And the reality is that both of them fight in battles. So on the surface, there's no difference between a warrior and a soldier. But warrior is a bit more mythical, isn't it? It's a bit more solitary. A soldier is of indeed the singular, soldiers the plural, but a soldier implies they are part of a unit. You don't have an army of one soldier, but you do have a warrior on their own, the lone brave warrior on the battlefield. And the reality is, it does seem that, you know, we talk about, for example, Viking warriors, not Viking soldiers. So I think one of the differences is organization. But it, even there, it gets confused. We talk about Spartan warriors, but the Spartans themselves loathe the idea of being singularly brave. You wanted to work together as the unit. That was the whole point of the Spartan phalanx. If one person broke formation, it made everybody vulnerable. You worked together as a group, and yet they trained on their own, which is interesting. So are the Spartans warriors or are the Spartans soldiers? Would depend on your perspective, but they would certainly argue, if you explained the definition of the two, they would say that they were soldiers, no doubt about that. Warriors tend to be those people pre-large-scale ballistic warfare. So I would say the last time of warriors in Europe were the time of the knights prior to the Hundred Years' War, when one man on the battlefield could make the difference. At the Battle of Bannockburn, for example, you got Robert the Bruce fighting the English, Edward II, King Edward II. And this happened. Robert the Bruce came out from the ranks and fought one English knight. This is an example of warriors in the early 1300s. There was still a certain level of protocol chivalry on the battlefield. But you just fast forward one generation to 1346, the Battle of Crecy, the first big land battle of the Hundred Years' War, and the French knights couldn't get anywhere near the English knights because they're being slaughtered by all of the longbowmen and a couple of cannons that Edward III had brought onto the battlefield. So, yes, had those rules been used at the time of Robert the Bruce, as he rode out on his own, he would have been shot in the face with an arrow. So, therefore, there were periods of warriors where, like I say, one lone man could make the difference, where the coordination of units was nowhere near as strong. I mean, obviously, that's a problem that goes all the way up to the 20th century with the invention of radio and telephones and more modern communication. But even then, nobody talks about General Ney was the bravest of the brave, as said by Napoleon. But nobody called him a warrior. He was a marshal. He was a general, he was a soldier, cavalryman, but nobody uses the word warrior about it, and yet he would charge into battle the same way that Robert the Bruce did. And so I think that there are ancient elements of the warrior and warrior culture, but again, when we talk about the Romans, we know about their leaders, and we talk about the legions, but we don't really talk about any individual soldier. They don't get mentioned. It wasn't like Varangeteryx, says Jim, immediately picking a Celtic name, but let's say he's in the Roman legions. You don't get brave warriors being mentioned. You do get brave warriors being mentioned in the likes of samurai culture, where again, samurai are definitely warriors rather than soldiers. They have that image. Again, if you want to start drilling into what actually happened at major battles like the Battle of Sekigahara in 1600, it's a lot harder to pick out individual acts of valor, and far more it's about the movements of groups of troops to clash against each other in a way that would be similar to Europe in the year 1600 as well. So it's really intriguing to me that warrior, it's almost like warriors never existed. They are like a mythological ideal of the martial principle, if that makes sense. Whereas you get soldiers, and they have been around for thousands of years. The thankless task of marching into battle, you're one of the unnamed host that won or lost at the Battle of Hastings, or the siege of Jerusalem in 1099, or whatever. You see my point. You know, there are literally millions of soldiers that we've got no idea of their names. But if somebody is credited as being a warrior, we almost invariably know their name as well. So is it a case of universal soldier? or is it a case really of Universal Warrior? But either way, it's a pretty fun watch on a Saturday evening. That's it from me, and as always, another episode coming soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.